If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The truth is the most convincing story that maps onto reality, and that's why the central narrative is falling apart.
Right now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
You must see the central narrative for the fiction that it is. We are Americans.
While elections are sometimes messy, this was a secure election.
The founders began the fight for human liberty and self-governance, and it's up to us to finish the job.
I tell you what, we are in a truth emergency right now.
This is the end game.
It's Monday, March 11th, 2024, the 1,146th day of dystopia. I'm your moderator, Chris Paul. Let's be reasonable. A warm welcome and hello to all of you listening to the podcast on the day of its release. The only way to do that is by becoming a paid subscriber at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as little as $50 a year or $5 a month, and in doing so, you will be supporting me, the work I do, and this show as it expands. And if you can't, or you simply don't want to, continue listening to the podcast for free a couple days later on a wide variety of podcast platforms, and of course, Rumble. All I ask is that you share it with your friends. You can find the links to the podcast, the writing, the social media, and the merch site by visiting linktree.com/imyourmoderator. So March 11th, 2024, 4 years ago, was the day that the very deadly pandemic began in earnest in the United States. That evening, March 11th, I was in Hollywood and attending the season 3 premiere of HBO's Westworld. I had friends involved in the show, and I arrived with them, waited while they did the red carpet, had conversations about Joe Biden's stutter that I remember vividly now 4 years later. We watched the season 3 premiere episode at the Chinese Theater at Hollywood in Highland. And then we went upstairs to an event space that used to occasionally function as a nightclub, though was never really successful. We headed up there to the event space for the after party. And at these after parties, they'll have an open bar. They will have either a buffet or tray passed food. And all of the industry people get together, the stars of the show, the directors, the producers, they take pictures. The entire thing is a massive commercial event for the launch of the new season of the show. That's what movie premieres and television premieres are. They seem like they're big, glamorous parties. But at the end of the day, the reason they have them, the purpose they serve, they are PR events to direct public attention toward this new project that is launching. Every now and then, these events can actually be really fun if the cast is young and hip and the production company wants to really do something unique with the event. But most of the time, they're like a business dinner, essentially, for people in the entertainment industry. So we had the screening for the season 3 premiere episode, and it's worth mentioning that Westworld is a show about AI-driven, human-like robots that are so advanced that they essentially take on the characteristics of being human, and they develop emotions and sensitivities. The show starts out where Westworld is just basically an amusement park of all of these human-like AIs. And the people who attend the amusement park, who are wealthy individuals, essentially go there to have sex with these human-like robots or commit violent acts against them. It is basically a land where they can live out all of their fantasies, no matter how depraved, because the only victims of these fantasies would be these human-like robots that, despite their outward appearance and the way they're able to interact, are nonetheless not humans. They don't have souls. They are just these robot AIs. Now, as the series progresses, it wrestles with the moral issues about whether or not humans have a moral duty not to inflict harm on these human-like AI robots because of how it affects them, the humans, and then also how it affects these robots and whether it's possible that they can get to the point where we actually do have a moral responsibility not to harm them. The show eventually decides, well, these AI robots are superior to these humans in every way. And since the humans have now got a moral responsibility to these robots, what we have to actually do is let this advanced superhuman species simply take us over. And I stopped watching at some point in season 3 because the show is bad and pretty much everyone in it is a communist. Now, I just have to say as a caveat, since I did not watch the entire duration of the series, maybe I am not sure how it ended up, but it was headed in a certain direction, and I doubt it turned around. So after the screening, we were on the escalators up to the after party, and this is kind of the time where everybody turns their phones back on. You got a few minutes between the end of the episode and when the glad handing and picture taking begins, and so everybody kind of just silently agrees that this is the time we are all going to check in on our phones and make sure that things are okay on Instagram and Twitter and answer any text messages or whatever else. And so while we're making that escalator trip, everybody is starting to hear that various aspects of our world have begun shutting down. The NBA has canceled its games for the evening. The NHL has canceled its games for the evening. Creepy Tom Hanks has COVID down in Australia with his wife. And everyone's like, oh no, what if Tom Hanks dies? Well, Tom Hanks didn't die. He's still just out there being creepy. And if you're listening to this thinking, wait a second, Tom Hanks is an American legend. He is just a beloved actor of television and film. Well, okay, I get it that you think that, and maybe you'll end up being right. But before you commit to that position, I would suggest looking into all of those creepy pictures he used to post on Instagram with like a lost child sock. There's something very strange going on there. So usually at these after parties, you'll hang out, have some drinks, see some people you haven't seen in a while. Everybody makes small talk. Everyone had a chance to play dress up for the evening. All the agents look how they always look, but all of the actors and directors, the creative people, usually they would just be in casual clothes no matter where they go. But premiere night, it's time for suit and tie and nice dresses and gowns. Everyone's in their look, I'm an adult costumes. But if you're not an agent or a publicist or a manager, someone who's attending premieres for their clients basically all the time, then these are very infrequent affairs. And so it's at least a break from the monotony and you try to have a good time. Usually you hang out for about 2 hours and then everybody goes somewhere else, like a bar or something, just to continue enjoying the night with their friends. But this one was different. Immediately, once everyone was up in that room, they had all checked their phones. Everyone was hearing about how things were shutting down around the world. And within that first half hour or 45 minutes, you could see that something really had changed. People were not shaking hands. They were doing fist bumps and elbow bumps already. That was proof that they knew what was going on and they trusted the science so hard. They knew what the science was. Don't touch anybody's hands ever again. They were all prepped. They had already heard about 2 weeks to slow the spread, flattening the curve. All of these things were known at that point. I used to listen to Sam Harris's podcast. It's called Making Sense. That used to be a regular in my rotation and obviously no longer is. But Sam Harris interviewed a man named Amesh Adalja on that same day, 3/11/20. And Amesh Adalja talked about chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine as a treatment for the very deadly pandemic. He talked about how low the infection fatality rate was. He said, this is not really anything to worry about. Now, he is at Johns Hopkins, so he was very well aware of the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security and their SPARS Pandemic 2025 to 2028 document that laid out an entire very deadly pandemic informational operation. It kind of gave you the playbook and the program. This is how we're going to message the public. This is the schedule, the timeline for when certain different events will occur. These are when things will roll out. Seems highly unlikely that he didn't know where that pandemic could go. But hey, we've been surprised many times. It would not surprise me to find out that the pandemic narrative originated in different places than we might have suspected. At this point, there is virtually nothing about the pandemic that we can be absolutely sure was true. For instance, lockdowns don't work. Masks don't work. We're told millions of people died from the very deadly pandemic. But the truth is, they can't actually prove that anyone did because their tests don't work. And the symptoms mirror other illnesses. Every COVID death reported is either data malpractice or medical malpractice because the hospital protocol was designed to kill whoever was subjected to it. People weren't dying at home. They were dying in the hospital or they were dying at nursing homes. And all of them had significant comorbidities and were of advanced age. And again, the tests don't work. And that was true the entire time. There were experts on their side giving us the reasons why we didn't need to fear the very deadly pandemic. And of course, that was ignored and all of those people eventually reversed their positions on just about everything, letting us know that in service of trusting the science as hard as possible, they were willing to lie about everything as society was destroyed. Now, having listened to all these things in advance of the final public launch of the very deadly pandemic, I wasn't worried about the pandemic because it didn't seem very deadly. And I had no interest to show everyone that I had heard the news and that I was going to be part of the good kids club. Hey, let's fist bump and elbow bump because I'm scared of the sniffles. All of it was ridiculous and I should have understood that warning better than I did. I figured all of this is going to blow over in a couple of weeks. Everything's going to be just fine and we'll go back to normal. And within a few days, Los Angeles basically ended forever, certainly for me. But regardless of my own personal experience, it is a different place than it used to be. And I really did love that city, so it is quite sad to say that was the end of an era. But happy anniversary to the very deadly pandemic, and rest in peace, Hollywood. Now, speaking of the end of an era and the sad, slow death of Hollywood, last night they held the Academy Awards ceremony. They gave out the Oscars. They had a television show to award themselves for making the best propaganda. Cy Oppenheimer was the biggest winner. But of course, there was plenty of attention on the Barbie movie as well. And for the record, Burning Bright and I covered that on an episode of Badlands Story Hour a couple weeks back, and people really enjoyed that episode. So if you haven't seen it or heard it, maybe that is something you want to do. So the award show is to honor various pieces of propaganda, and the award show itself is also propaganda, and the selection of who receives the awards, of course, has to be part of the propaganda. As we have discussed prior on this show, last year they awarded an Oscar to CNN's documentary Navalny about so-called Russian opposition leader / intel asset Alexei Navalny. And this year in the Oscars In Memoriam segment, where they honor the famous people who have died over the past year, they included a tribute to Alexei Navalny. And consider how strange it is that they need to prop up this image of Alexei Navalny as a credible opposition figure to Vladimir Putin by first creating a documentary movie for him, then awarding the movie an Oscar to make people think it's important, even though there is absolutely nothing remotely special about it, and then including him in the In Memoriam segment to remind everybody that, yes, this real important leader has now died, and oh yeah, it's Vladimir Putin's fault. And that, of course, is not where the propaganda ended. They also awarded an Oscar to a movie called 20 Days in Mariupol, which, according to the comedic actor in Ukraine, Volodymyr Zelensky, in a Telegram post today, is a film that shows the truth about Russian terrorism. He said it allows us to speak loudly about Russia's war against Ukraine. Now, Mariupol was considered to be one of the most brutal battles in the Russia-Ukraine quote-unquote war, with each side accusing the other of various atrocities. Luckily for the Ukraine side, which is the global regime side, they have control of all the propaganda media, so they can do things like make Oscar-winning documentary movies to make sure that their anti-Russian position is seen in the West as correct and moral, just like in CNN's documentary about Navalny. I guess if it's got to be one way or another, I'd prefer it be this way. I'm glad that Hollywood is being totally transparent about the level of propaganda and about their motivations. I prefer when everyone's cards are just out on the table. Now, I don't know who among them thinks any of this is working, but they don't really have a lot of other tools in the toolbox, so they use what they have, no matter how ineffective it becomes, because their only other option is giving up. And then the entire thing falls apart anyway, so you might as well at least go down swinging. Now, I want to be very clear that I did not watch this last night. And beyond Oppenheimer and the Barbie movie, which I watched for Story Hour, I haven't seen any of the films, and I don't really care about any of the inside baseball of it anymore, so there is nothing there for me. Same reason I didn't watch the Super Bowl. I don't like spending hours of my time consuming disguised regime propaganda in between breaks for blatant regime propaganda in the commercials. But I, like most of you, am still on various social media apps and wake up and see what's in the news every day, so you'll get exposed to some of this stuff. But one of the saddest and most shameful nights last night was a humiliation ritual, apparently, for John Cena, the former WWE wrestler who is now an action movie star. He's like a less interesting, less popular version of The Rock. You might remember a few years ago, he had to record a video of himself apologizing and capitulating to the Chinese Communist Party for some remark he made about Taiwan, if memory serves. But last night, he was forced to participate in a sketch with Jimmy Kimmel, where Jimmy starts joking about how John Cena is supposed to go streaking at the Oscars, like he's going to run across the stage naked. That's the big gag. And then Cena gets scared of doing it, and Jimmy Kimmel is like, "Oh, come on, John. And then this ridiculous, naked bodybuilder dude, John Cena, he just shuffles across the stage sideways so no one sees his butt, completely naked, covering his midsection with a card or something. Just absolutely so embarrassing, so humiliating. And then you've got the host, Jimmy Kimmel himself, who ended up reading a Donald Trump Truth Social post during the Oscars live broadcast. Donald Trump had posted making fun of Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Kimmel was shown that post and then went out on stage and read that post to the national audience and all of the Hollywood communists attending the Oscars.
Just got a review, and has there ever been a worse host than Jimmy Kimmel at the Oscars? His opening was that of a less than average person trying too hard to be something which he is not and never can be. Get rid of Kimmel and perhaps replace him with another washed up but cheap ABC talent, George Sloppenopoulos. He would make everybody on stage look bigger, stronger, and more glamorous. Blah, blah, blah. Make America great again. Okay, now, see if you can guess which former president just posted that on Truth Social.
Now, Jimmy Kimmel skipped some of Trump's post. He just blah, blah, blahed through this part. He said, also a really bad politically correct show tonight and for years. Disjointed, boring, and very unfair. Why don't they just give the Oscars to those that deserve them? Maybe that way, their audience and TV ratings will come back from the depths. And then he says, make America great again. Shocking that Jimmy Kimmel didn't want to read that part. So Kimmel said in an interview today with Kelly Ripa that the show was actually running short. The Oscars are famous for running way long. They even started the ceremony this year earlier so that they wouldn't lose primetime viewers on the East Coast because the show just drags on and on and on past 11 p.m., past midnight, etc. But this time they were actually ahead of schedule. So apparently the producers told Kimmel that he could ad-lib a bit. He said he was going to go out and read Trump's Truth Social post. They encouraged him not to, and by golly, he defied those producers and did it anyway. And maybe he thought that they would be able to mock and shame Trump in front of a national audience. Oh, they would laugh so hard. The stupid man is triggered by us Hollywood actors. We are the thespians and we just live inside Donald Trump's head, rent-free. We decide what's cool in this country. And we've decided Donald Trump is not cool, not cool at all. And we are going to remind everybody how not cool he is. And we're going to say we don't care about that man at all the time. We are going to talk about him all the time to show how little we care about him. In fact, here's what's going to happen. We're going to make it cool to care about him by showing everyone how much we don't care about him. So it's all right not to care about him at all, but if you really want to show Donald Trump who's boss, what you're going to need to do is get absolutely obsessed with telling everyone else how much you don't care about him. That'll show him. Now, is Jimmy Kimmel fully under control, and did someone force him to do that so that he could look like a fool in front of the nation? I don't know. I guess it's possible, but giving that answer to every question isn't very enlightening. And if you believe that's the case, then it's time to move on to the moral questions about the morality of putting a years-long stage play on in front of an entire nation to trick them in one way or another. But let's ignore that interpretation for now and assume that Jimmy Kimmel is who people believe that he is, and that Kimmel thought he could score some points on Donald Trump and make Donald Trump look like a fool. Well, imagine you are at home watching the Oscars, and you're not just a Hollywood-obsessed degenerate communist. Well, your experience was changed quite a lot by that moment. All of a sudden, you are hearing Donald Trump mock what you're watching, and the host, who is supposed to be kind of shepherding you through this entertainment experience, Jimmy Kimmel, basically said the words about himself that many of the people watching the whole affair we're probably already thinking, that doesn't make Jimmy Kimmel look good. That reminds them, oh yeah, this actually does kind of suck. And I gotta say, I kind of agree with Donald Trump. Now, it's probably not hard to understand that MAGA wasn't watching the Oscars last night, but the standard issue villagers out there on the uniparty right and the uniparty left, all those people who are obsessed with pop culture and will tell you that politically they are centrists, you know, like all the smart people, well, they and the show they're watching just got mocked by Donald Trump, and there has to be a part of them that thinks, yeah, Trump is probably right. The media, of course, is all very happy about this. They're trying to claim that Jimmy Kimmel called out Trump. Kimmel said, following the clip you just heard, well, thank you, President Trump. Thank you for watching. I'm surprised you're still... Isn't it past your jail time? Oh, it's so clever. Just like saying, isn't it past your bedtime, but jail, because Trump's going to jail. You get it? They're sending him to jail in order to defend democracy. Jimmy Kimmel also did an interview with CNN, and he said, one of the most fun parts of my job is knowing that he hates being made fun of and making fun of him. This being Donald Trump. And oh yes, Donald Trump, I am sure, is at Mar-a-Lago crying over Jimmy Kimmel jokes. Kimmel went on, and then every once in a while, he reminds us that he hates it, and he gets mad. So I love that. I take some pleasure in it. Well, hey, Jimmy, we take some pleasure in it too, because you just read Donald Trump's words making fun of you to a national audience, and then you went and advertised Truth Social. Thank you, Jimmy. And the media spent years trying to make fun of Truth Social as well. At many points, they've tried to claim that it's a failure. It's not a perfect app, but it's been improving consistently for the now 2 years since its beta launch in late February of 2022. It was never going to just launch and then take the social media world by storm. The technology isn't capable of that. And it was never the intent. It was supposed to be an outpost for free speech, and it has stood as that for the last 2 years. Last week, Donald Trump used Truth Social to respond in real time to the fake president's fake State of the Union on Thursday night. And so many people went to Truth Social at the beginning of the fake president's fake State of the Union that the app was kind of crashing here and there. It wasn't able to service all of the traffic. And I'm sure that that probably annoyed the app developers, but for everyone else, it's kind of a very obvious sign that there is heavy demand for this app because Donald Trump is responding. It's its own kind of real-world proof of popularity. And it comes at a great time because the merger of DWAC and TMTG will be coming next Friday, the 22nd, and that could, by the way, net Trump about $4 billion. So thank you, Jimmy Kimmel, for helping to make Truth Social a household name by talking about the app at the Oscars. Now, before we leave the subject of Hollywood completely, there was another Hollywood-oriented clown show over the weekend, and it was on the set of Real Time with Bill Maher. Actor Robert De Niro stopped by and said this.
Nothing at all. Nothing redeemable in him. And we have to, and whoever the people are who want to vote for him, and there look like intelligent people around there, somebody, for some reason, it can't be. It cannot be. If he wins the election, you won't be on the show anymore. He'll come looking for me. There'll be things that happen that none of us can imagine. That's what happens in that kind of a dictatorship, which is what he says. Let's believe him. Take him at his word.
I did from the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, I said from the very beginning, this guy is never going to concede power. And he still hasn't.
No.
He still hasn't. He just admitted he lost the last election. And he advertises that he will go on. He says he's been cheated out of one term. So maybe we should get rid of the only a president only gets two terms thing.
All right. Now, a couple things here. First off, Robert De Niro starts by talking about how he could never see himself playing Donald Trump. He just can't detect anything good and redeemable in Donald Trump's character. Nothing that could make him attach, make him love the character and see himself in that character. Donald Trump is just too evil for Robert De Niro to play. He doesn't meet Robert De Niro's standards. But there are, of course, other candidates who Robert De Niro has played that outwardly seem like they're probably pretty evil. But apparently Robert De Niro was able to find something loving and worthwhile and redeemable in them that he could attach to. Now, he has played all sorts of brutal mobsters. He played boxers that beat their wives. He's played stalkers and murderers. He's even played political criminals, the kinds of people he pretends MAGA supporters are when he played Travis Bickle in Taxi Driver. And apparently he was able to find something good and loving and redeemable in all of those characters, but not Donald Trump. Donald Trump is just too dark, despite the fact that well over half the country thinks that Donald Trump is an American hero. And as De Niro admits, there are some smart people who support him too. But that's just, I guess, because all of those people are also evil. So that's right, we need to get moral advice from an actor. And of course, then he goes on and complains about how Donald Trump is some sort of authoritarian dictator. And if he is able to once again become the publicly recognized president of the United States of America, Bill Maher is going to be taken off the television. Donald Trump is going to come after Robert De Niro. Why are they so panicked? They are proudly and publicly cheering on the political persecution and prosecution of their political opponent and the people in the opposition political party, including the supporters who they call domestic terrorists and extremists. But of course, they're doing all of that in order to protect democracy from Donald Trump and his supporters. Because if they're somehow able to vote their way into power, they'll be overthrowing democracy in doing so. Does it make sense? No, it's totally irrational. Do they care? No. Why would they care? They have control, they think, over the means of information. They always have had that control. They're always able to push whatever idea, whatever agenda they want. And ultimately, everyone's just going to have to accept it because they're going to be told that everyone believes this thing and only bad people believe the other thing. So unless you want to be called a bad person by us, you're going to have to believe what we believe. It always worked, but it doesn't work anymore. And you got to wonder if that's why they're panicking. What have these people done? That is the real question at the bottom of all of this. What have they done? Now, it's possible that they are just worried about their reputation. This could be entirely ego. This could be a calculation about their standing within the party of false decorum. They are going to lose so much status that it will be like they have done decades of their life for absolutely nothing. It turns out that achieving fame and fortune based on propaganda and fiat currency wasn't all it was cracked up to be. It could just be snatched from you. If all of a sudden the people who had empowered you are no longer in power. Whoops, I guess, huh, Hollywood? So there is that. Maybe all the hard work they have put in will go to absolutely nothing. When you are playing a reputation game within the party of false decorum, that is everything. That is your life's work, establishing your reputation, establishing yourself as one of the prominent, most revered actors in American cinematic history, as Robert De Niro did do. And now he's destroying all of that on his own. If he had just shut up 10 years ago, he would not have any of these problems. He would just have a nice career. But of course, that wasn't an option because he works for the propaganda industry and he has to participate in the propaganda or else he becomes a non-entity. And if he actually does have corruption or compromise in his past, well, they can bring all of that to the public light and there goes De Niro's career and De Niro's reputation. So you either lose your reputation through a public takedown if you refuse to go along with the agenda, or you participate, hope for the best, and end up losing your reputation when it all goes wrong. That is why they're horrified of Trump and MAGA, and it only gets worse for people who have really bad skeletons in their closet, and certainly plenty of them do. Now, Bill Maher's reaction is Very curious, because he first suggests that Trump would never give up power. Bill Maher has been predicting this for years and years. And then Donald Trump, after having quote unquote lost the 2020 election, did in the public perception do that very thing. He gave up power. He walked away. He let Joe Biden become fake president and launch his fake presidency. And we have watched in horror as all of that has played out. But as far as the normie mind is concerned, the knowledge base of the standard issue villagers out there, they've all watched Donald Trump give up power. And Bill Maher's pretending that because he is still, quote unquote, seeking power, that means he never gave up power. Because he has said that he didn't actually lose the 2020 election, that means he's never given up power. Now, is Bill Maher just extremely well-informed and an info-op agent of the other side? That is entirely possible. Is he under full messaging control of the, quote unquote, white hats? That's possible, too. It's possible that Bill Maher knows far more than he lets on. Maybe he's just crystal clear that Donald Trump absolutely still is the real president. Maybe that's why he's worried that Donald Trump will never walk away from power. He'll never stop after two terms. Maybe Bill Maher thinks that this is his second term, and he's upset that Donald Trump is going to be going for another 4 years, and who knows how much more. I suppose it's possible that Bill Maher has read Devolution. With the way everyone reacted after Donald Trump launched his new quote-unquote campaign after the 2022 midterms, maybe all those people engaged in the public stage show we're all watching about the fake Joe Biden presidency, who thought the Donald Trump era would be over after 2024 no matter what, maybe this is their ongoing freakout, knowing that Trump isn't going anywhere. Or maybe this is just an extension of that same panic. Now, speaking of actors and clowns, here is Alex Jones talking about Donald Trump's post on Truth Social the other night, where he quoted from the fake president's fake State of the Union address, the segment on vaccines, and Trump added his own comments. Here is the post. And this first part is a quote from Biden, quote, "The pandemic no longer controls our lives. The vaccines that saved us from COVID are now being used to help cancer, turning setback into comeback, exclamation point," end quote. So Joe Biden said that at the State of the Union. Trump said, "You're welcome, Joe. 9-month approval time versus 12 years that it would have taken you." And that apparently was able to send people across the Trump-friendly but not actually MAGA spectrum, from Con Inc. to DeSantis simps to those lying in wait, ready to try to shift everyone toward Robert F. Kennedy Jr., all of them immediately jumped on this. Oh, Donald Trump is saying something okay about the vax again. He has to denounce this vaccine. He has to say it was wrong for him to hurry it to market. He needs to take responsibility. That is what they've been calling out for 2.5 years. Someone in my chat pulled up on Saturday an episode of mine from December of 2021, where I made the argument that people needed to stop calling for Trump to say the thing about the vax. So I've been talking about this for 2.5 years while we have heard the same argument trotted out again and again and again from people who say that they are actually Trump supporters. Well, I support Trump, but not for this. And they spend all their time talking about how very bad Joe Biden is. And some of them even talk about the Great Reset. They seem to have some understanding that there is something bigger going on than just elections. Most of these people don't, by the way, mention that our elections are stolen. But we are years deep into this info op now about Trump and the vaccine. Now, if you've never heard my argument about this, you can go to Substack, use the search feature on my Substack. I'm your moderator, .substack.com. Type in Trump vaccine. There's an episode from about, I think, a year ago called The Trump Vaccine. And you can hear all about it. And my argument does not rely on claims about what Trump's actual vaccine is that he's talking about. Some people think he's talking about hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, and that is what Trump refers to as the vaccine, not the thing that everyone else has gotten. And who knows, maybe those people will turn out to be right. I don't personally think so, but it doesn't matter to me. because that's not the point. The point is Trump is not responsible for anyone taking the vaccine ever. And there are a couple of points I'd like to add to that. But first, let's listen to Alex Jones.
So the vaccines didn't save us from COVID, didn't save lives, erase our immune systems, and he says are now being used to help beat cancer. If I see any more of this from Trump, any more of this, I'm going to have to go on the warpath politically. I just cannot take this. I cannot put my head down on the pillow at night and say that I'm a true person to everybody when I've already held my nose because of the overwhelming good he's doing and all the persecution and put up with stuff like this. It'd be like if your mother created this great Thanksgiving meal and cooked for 2 days to get it ready, and it's this beautiful meal on the table, and your mother comes out and pulls her pants down and shits all over the table. Doesn't matter how good the turkey or the ham is or the stuffing or the collard greens or the sweet potatoes or the salad or the pumpkin pie or the cobbler, because she just shit all over the table.
Now, it is always a bad idea to pretend to know what Donald Trump is doing and thinking, and so therefore telling him what he needs to do based on some normie perspective makes absolutely no sense. The New York Times Siena poll last weekend told us that 97% of respondents who said they voted for Donald Trump in 2020 said they intend to vote for Donald Trump again. Only 1% of the Trump voters polled by the New York Times Siena poll said they planned to switch, whereas 10% of Joe Biden's voters, as reported by that poll, said they intend to switch to Trump. Only 83% of Biden voters say they intend to support Biden again. So already Trump's doing just fine with his supporters. The Ron DeSantis op attempted to convince everyone many times that there was this mass of Trump voters that wouldn't be supporting him this year. Trump has just gone too far between the insurrection and his support of the vaccines and his inability to move past the 2020 election, blah, blah, blah. That's what we were told for months and months and months. It's never been true. Trump has made these statements every few months for 3 years. It's baked into the cake. These claims are not turning Trump voters away. If anything, they are cementing Trump voters in their views, watching people attempt to take Trump down every time he says one of these things. But all of these people who are well-paid, popular media figures who by and large did not get censored from 2020 to 2023. Each time this happens, they let us know that there is this big chunk of Trump's base that he's going to lose. And because he loses those people, well, then he's going to lose the election to Joe Biden. So Trump needs to disavow the vaccines right away. And he needs to make sure to never say anything supportive about them ever again. He should come out, say the vaccines are very deadly. In fact, this is a genocide. Trump needs to take responsibility. He needs to come out and say that he is part of this genocide, despite the fact that he didn't make the vaccine and didn't make anyone take the vaccine. He has said occasionally that he thinks you should get it if you think you need it, but he would never mandate it. And that right there should be the absolute end of the story. He is not responsible for anyone taking it. People had their reasons. If they were motivated enough by those reasons and then thought it was okay because Donald Trump said it was okay, well, all right. I guess there might be some people out there who really believe that Donald Trump had the final say in their personal medical choice. But if that's true, those people still have only themselves to blame. Donald Trump is not responsible for anyone taking that vaccine, period. People did not take that vaccine because they listened to Donald Trump, and the argument falls apart on its face. Because in order to have taken that vaccine, you would have to believe that the very deadly pandemic was actually very deadly and very scary, which would mean that you didn't listen to Donald Trump. And you would have to believe that you had no treatment or therapy alternatives other than that vaccine, which would mean you did not listen to Donald Trump. And you would have had to think that vaccines have always historically been very safe and very effective which would also mean that you have not listened to Donald Trump, because all of those other ideas are ideas that Donald Trump has pushed and that people ignored and that people called him a conspiracy theorist for pushing. So anyone who got that vaccine and claims to have done so because they listened to Donald Trump actually chose not to listen to Donald Trump about other subjects that would have let them know very easily that they should not go out and inject themselves with a toxic experimental substance that cannot protect them from a disease that could not kill them simply because the television told them that all the smart people like them were doing it and they'd get in trouble if they didn't. And that is, sadly, exactly what people did. If they were people who listened to Donald Trump and heeded his advice at every turn, there is no way they would have gotten that vaccine, because Donald Trump spent a long time letting them all know all the reasons why they never should and don't need it. And beyond that, the fact that he had mentioned therapies so many times, that should have made it impossible for the vaccine to be released with an emergency use authorization. So Trump actually took care of that too, except the regulatory agencies overrode Donald Trump. They granted the emergency use authorization regardless because they had already stopped the use of ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and other treatments, saying that they were actually dangerous in order to make sure no other treatments would be available. No one out there got the vaccine because Donald Trump told them to. No one out there got the vaccine because they listened to Donald Trump and do whatever he says. It is not even logically possible for that to be true. But nonetheless, we have these supposed conservative media figures pushing the idea that Donald Trump, because of these comments, somehow was involved in this genocide and he has to take responsibility for it. And the people making these claims are the same people out there saying nothing is more important than making sure that Biden does not win re-election. Of course, most of these people are the people in Con Inc., Con Inc. adjacent media, who pretended that Joe Biden actually won in 2020 and is a real legitimate president. These are the people who empowered Joe Biden to have this role as fake president in the first place. They're not Joe Biden's enemies. They are the controlled opposition. They are saying that Donald Trump was essentially involved in genocide, and until he takes responsibility for it, they just can't vote for him. And this idea is crazy. This is how you can know it's dishonest. These people don't mean it. It's because it's totally nonsensical. They are saying Donald Trump is responsible for a genocide that he's not actually responsible for. And until he admits that he's responsible for genocide, they can't vote for him. But once he does admit that he is responsible for genocide, then they will accept his apology and vote for him, despite the fact that he admits he committed genocide. That is what these people are saying. It is totally incoherent. And it eventually becomes obvious that these people just don't want to publicly support Donald Trump. They want to portray themselves as wiser, more informed, more insightful, more honest. They're going to tell Donald Trump what he must do in order to win their support, despite the fact that he doesn't need their support. These people have not really been supportive the entire time. Most of them have accepted, as I said, the usurpation of this country. They just took it and moved on because of who Donald Trump was. And now they're saying that they're going to withhold their support for Donald Trump unless he goes ahead and takes responsibility for a genocide he's got nothing to do with. And what do they do at that point? Do they actually vote for him? No, they probably don't. They say, yeah, well, Donald Trump finally admitted it and he finally apologized, but it's just too much. And his apology, it wasn't enough, and I really need to vote for someone who I can trust on the issue of vaccine genocide, and that is Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And hey, I'm not an RFK Jr. hater. I understand he has some totally unpalatable liberal political positions, but he does want to take down the deep state. He does want to rein in pharma. He does want to rein in the intelligence community. So you can't be entirely mad at him. I have theorized on this podcast before that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. with the Democrat Party is playing a role very similar to Donald Trump's role with the Republican Party back in 2015 and 2016. It remains to be seen what his ultimate effect is. I have suggested before that maybe Robert F. Kennedy Jr. would make an interesting other side of a unity ticket, becoming Donald Trump's vice president, maybe under the old original constitutional rules, and together they both pursue the deep state. I have suggested before that maybe RFK Jr. is appointed with his own particular role to go after the intelligence community. I don't know how it will wind up. I don't love RFK Jr. I don't hate RFK Jr. He's just a guy. It is all information, among other information. He seems to be an important character. Therefore, we watch him. But I can absolutely see an info op dedicated to supporting Robert F. Kennedy Jr. in spinning off parts of MAGA, parts of Donald Trump's base of support toward RFK Jr. based on this very vaccine issue. If I'm right about that, then we will see them pursue all the same strategies as the Ron DeSantis op pursued. It will be like Ron Part 2. And just as we leave open the possibility that Ron DeSantis himself is some sort of kayfabe operation meant to draw out people disguising themselves as MAGA, but really representing Con Inc., Con Inc. donors, whatever, the same can be true for Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He could be doing something very similar, drawing out a different group of people with different political priorities, all of it ultimately serving to help Donald Trump and the America First movement. Or it could be the real thing. Either way, it's worth keeping an eye on. Now, I know a lot of people really like Alex Jones, and other people think that Alex Jones is obviously an intelligence asset and just running an info op. I think there's probably elements of truth to that, but I'm not sure what to make of him. I don't play black hat versus white hat on absolutely everybody and try to figure that out. Alex Jones is presenting me with information, among other information. The surface level interpretation is that Alex Jones is either a moron or running some kind of info op. The most obvious surface level interpretation is that Alex Jones knows what he's talking about, is running an info op, and that it is anti-Trump. But is the net effect anti-Trump? No, it won't be. And so it's totally possible that Alex Jones is participating in an info op designed to help Trump. But that's not the surface level view. It's possible. Maybe Alex Jones is just a wonderful man. I don't know the guy. I know people who do know the guy and they like him. But all I know for sure is that he is pushing an anti-Trump argument that has been pushed repeatedly over the last 2.5 years. It is a dumb argument, and ultimately, it is a totally immoral argument to accuse someone of participating in genocide that they were not involved in at all. Donald Trump hurried an already created medical product to the market so that lockdowns would end, so that crazy people would think that they were protected from the very deadly pandemic and lockdowns would then no longer be justified. The lockdowns were the deadliest part of the very deadly pandemic by far. The entire purpose of those lockdowns was voided by the presence of the vaccine in the public understanding. That would not have happened without Donald Trump, and that is why he focuses on the 9 months versus 12 years. And that is what we were supposed to have. Intermittent lockdowns for 12 years. You've heard about climate lockdowns. Then they get your vaccine digital passport, which was part of the COVID narrative. And that has your social credit score, your digital currency. It has everything on it. They track you fully all the time. They can decide where you're allowed to go all the time, where you're allowed to shop, whether or not you're allowed to turn on your electric car, and where you're allowed to go. They wanted 15-minute cities. They wanted your entire living zone, the places you're allowed to go. They wanted all of that to be geo-fenced in. They can track you inside that, keep you in there. You're not allowed to spend money outside. They can control people in whatever ways they want. That's where it was going. Imagine all of that with intermittent COVID lockdowns because they've decided that not enough of the population, for instance, was up to date on their gene therapy subscription. You can hate the vaccine. You can hate vaccines in general. You can hate the pharma companies. You can hate everybody involved with COVID, and you would be justified. But Donald Trump pushing the vaccine to market that was already created, he had nothing to do with its creation, that voided the lockdowns. Donald Trump is actually allowed to take credit for that. In the future, you can imagine that this will be the widely understood, widely accepted version of events, because this is what happened. This is not the mainstream media story. This is not what people are told, but this is what happened. And at some point, people will look back on Trump's words now and they'll be like, well, yeah, he was taking credit for pushing it to market, because if he hadn't have done that, we would have stayed locked down. And the fact that the lockdowns had already pushed hundreds of millions of people in the world into extreme poverty by August of 2020 means that if lockdowns had persisted, it would be a world historic event, a catastrophic crisis, the likes of which the world had never seen. And of course, that's what they intended. Their plan was called Build Back Better. The question should always be, build back from what? How did they know that there was going to be a disaster of the magnitude that would require us to engage in a great reset? Society would be so destroyed that we would essentially have to start all over again with a new system, new money, new ways of going about our lives. In a few years, we'll own nothing and we'll be happy. Their program was called Build Back Better. They expected for things to be destroyed. Now, who could predict something like that? Well, the people who planned it could predict something like that. And of course, they did plan it, but things were never quite destroyed enough to need a Build Back Better. So it seems like their plan to destroy everything got thwarted in some capacity. And some people have theorized that it was thwarted because it was sped up to the point where it would become obvious to everyone and they would reject it. It was sped up to a point so fast that you might call it warp speed. And it was intentional the entire time, as if it was part of like some operation. And of course, those people who predicted the destruction of society and planned it in advance and had planned the response in the Build Back Better program, well, they were also associated with and or owned all of the companies that would then come in and exert control over societies at large and profit spectacularly from the process of building back better and imposing the Marxist brainwashing across all of society. And it didn't work because someone sped up their program to the point where it became obvious to everyone and everyone rejected it. And they were supposed to be able to implement all this stuff in the course of these extended and intermittent lockdowns that would play out over years and years, absolutely decimating society so that they can bring on the Great Reset right in time for the completion of their 2030 agenda. I mean, thank goodness someone sped that up enough to alert everyone so that it could be stopped. And I know, all of this is a conspiracy theory. The fact that I am defending Donald Trump about the vaccine, that means I'm a cult member. I just can't see that Donald Trump has done such grave ills. He has done so many things wrong, and I just refuse to take responsibility for them. I refuse to even admit he did anything wrong. I'm a cult member. That's what I am. I do everything that Donald Trump tells me to do as a member of his cult, except I didn't take that vaccine that Donald Trump told everyone to take, that he's responsible for, that all of his cult members surely must have taken, even though we were the least likely people in the entire country to have taken it. So Donald Trump's responsibility for the vax? Nope. MAGA as cult members? Nope. And Donald Trump needs to say the thing about the vaccine, or members of Con Inc. Media who have already tried to take him down for 3.5 years and who supported Joe Biden as a legitimate president in the first place? Nope. No, he doesn't. Silence. Silence, communists. We'll take it from here. I have to say, things are getting really obvious now. The clown world is just on full display, right out in the open. Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce with the Super Bowl. Normies are seeing that we are in clown world. Same thing with the Oscars last night. We're watching people who were some of the most revered artists in our society make absolute fools of themselves. We're watching all of these undercover anti-Trump ops rear their ugly heads and show themselves. And then we have the pure panic of all of those people beginning to come to grips with the fact that they did not get rid of Donald Trump through the censorship and the propaganda and the coups and the false flag attempts and the hacks and the cyber attacks and the fake foreign proxy wars and the ongoing political persecutions. Donald Trump just keeps getting stronger and MAGA just keeps getting bigger. And people keep panicking. Here is some beautiful panic from none other than the watermelon head himself, Adam Schiff, who is, by the way, a good friend of a former Democratic bundler named Ed Buck. And if you've never looked up Adam Schiff and Ed Buck before, by all means, do so. Ted Lieu is one of their pals as well. Ed Buck, you see, a Democrat bundler, a gay man who used to invite young black male escorts over to his house and then drug them. And they just had this really strange habit of dying. It's a good story. You should look it up and then you should ask Adam Schiff about it. Here he is speaking to NBC's Kristen Welker.
Congressman, let me ask you about this development this weekend. U.S. intelligence officials are planning to provide briefings for Donald Trump if he officially secures the nomination, despite the fact that he's facing 40 felony charges for his handling of classified documents. As the former chair of the House Intelligence Committee, do you think it's appropriate for him to receive intelligence briefings?
Well, that is the practice, but we've never had a situation where one of the candidates for president has been so criminally negligent when it comes to handling, if not worse, when it comes to handling classified information. So I have to hope, and knowing the intelligence community as I do, that they will dumb down the briefing for Donald Trump. That is, they will give him no more information than absolutely necessary, nothing that would reveal sources or methods. Because we can't trust that he will do the right thing with that information. He's been so reckless. So, yes, it does concern me. It is part of a long tradition. They will be wary of what they share with him, and they should.
So, for context here, they're talking about what will happen when Donald Trump becomes the official Republican nominee. Once he crosses the delegate threshold, which he is expected to do tomorrow night, will he then begin receiving intelligence briefings as the presumptive nominee from one of the major political parties, as it is the custom to do? Now, you have to wonder why they would be doing this if what they were transferring to these political candidates was actually very sensitive, classified intelligence. Seems like it's basically a way for the intelligence communities to control what the candidates know and then be able to manipulate their actions and their messaging in accordance with the interests of the intelligence community operating on behalf of the global regime as they implement their agenda. Now, Kristen Welker asks if it makes sense that Donald Trump would be allowed to receive intelligence briefings, considering that he's under indictment under the Espionage Act for mishandling top secret national security information. Despite that, the intelligence community is still going to give him briefings. It's like they don't even think that indictment is real. And I know, Donald Trump is very, very indicted. He is extremely indicted. He is so indicted, you can't even imagine what it would be like if he wasn't indicted. That's how legitimately indicted he is. And some of that is on espionage, mishandling classified documents. But despite that, they're going to go ahead and give him more classified information anyway, even though Donald Trump's very presence on the world stage is a threat to democracy worldwide. What a danger he is. Just, you know, not enough of a danger to break custom and prevent him from seeing our most important classified intel on world affairs. Hey, guys, I don't know what to tell you. It's just not real. And try this one on for size. Friday night, Donald Trump hosted Viktor Orban from Hungary at Mar-a-Lago. And pictures of them were taken together. They had a meeting that looked like a high-level presidential cabinet meeting, and all reports suggest that the two got along wonderfully. Viktor Orban has been very supportive of Donald Trump on many occasions, and it seems like it was a very productive meeting between two world leaders. Oh, I'm just kidding. I know Donald Trump's not really a world leader. He's not really president right now. He's just a former president who's having other world leaders over to his house so they can hang out. Now, at the beginning of Donald Trump's first term, we were told that Michael Flynn needed to be prosecuted under the Logan Act for having contact with Russian officials. You see, unless you're specifically authorized to carry on negotiations with foreign officials or foreign governments, that's a major violation. It was the fake president Joe Biden himself that suggested in that January meeting in 2017 during the transition that they pursue Michael Flynn under the Logan Act. You would think that with how many times they have really legitimately in real life indicted Donald Trump, they would go after him in a split second for carrying on negotiations with foreign leaders while he's not president. But here we have Viktor Orban just going down to the Winter White House at Mar-a-Lago and hanging out with Donald Trump and having very official looking meetings. And no one is raiding Mar-a-Lago or arresting Donald Trump. Why not? I mean, he's not the real president. He can't be. That's a conspiracy theory. So why is he carrying on these negotiations with foreign leaders? I mean, I am shocked. If I was a child-brained communist, I might say that Donald Trump seems to be committing treason right here. They've been told that Viktor Orban is an autocrat, and autocrat is the worst thing you can be as a political leader. Don't ask them to define it because they won't be able to, but that's what all of these leaders like Putin and Trump and Bolsonaro and Orban and Mohammed bin Salman, they're all autocrats. We have the rise of autocrats worldwide. But you know what's weird? Putting that aside, because that treason claim just doesn't make any sense, Adam Schiff seems like maybe he's the one in trouble. I mean, why is he encouraging the intelligence community to deny a potential president of the United States access to classified intel? He's saying that it's too dangerous to give it to Trump, but what happens when Trump is just publicly recognized as president once again? Is it too dangerous then too? You're just supposed to keep information back from the president of the United States of America? Gosh, I hope they didn't do that in Donald Trump's first term, because that would seem like it was part of the subversion, part of the coup. And if it was in dealings with our foreign adversaries or in coordination with them or on behalf of them or some kind of foreign global regime, man, that might be treason. Are we in a time of war? Well, Donald Trump did tell us we were many times throughout 2020. I wonder what it would be to withhold intelligence from the American president under those circumstances and for those motivations. And I would love to know the difference between what I just described and what Adam Schiff said on NBC, because it almost seems to me like maybe Adam Schiff has a potential treason issue there. Now, speaking of uniparty communists who may have committed treason, this is from Molly Hemingway in The Federalist on Friday. Liz Cheney and January 6th committee suppressed exonerating evidence of Trump's push for National Guard. And this is a long piece. I'm just going to read the introductory section here. Former Representative Liz Cheney's January 6th committee suppressed evidence that President Donald Trump pushed for 10,000 National Guard troops to protect the nation's capital, a previously hidden transcript obtained by the Federalist shows. This is something we have all known from the very beginning. Kash Patel has said this countless times. This is a rerun, but it is a nice enhancement for this particular cycle. Cheney and her committee falsely claimed they had, quote-unquote, no evidence to support Trump officials' claims the White House had communicated its desire for 10,000 National Guard troops. In fact, an early transcribed interview conducted by the committee included precisely that evidence from a key source. The interview, which Cheney attended and personally participated in, was suppressed from public release until now. Deputy Chief of Staff Anthony Ornato's first transcribed interview with the committee was conducted on January 28, 2022. In it, he told Cheney and her investigators that he overheard White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows push Washington, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser to request as many National Guard troops as she needed to protect the city. He also testified President Trump had suggested 10,000 would be needed to keep the peace at the public rallies and protests scheduled for January 6, 2021. Ornato also described White House frustration with Acting Secretary of Defense Christopher Miller's slow deployment of assistance on the afternoon of January 6, 2021. Not only did the committee not accurately characterize the interview, they suppressed the transcript from public view. On top of that, committee allies began publishing critical stories and even conspiracy theories about Ornato ahead of follow-up interviews with him. Ornato was a career Secret Service official who had been detailed to the security position in the White House. Ornato, by the way, was the guy who, according to Cassidy Hutchinson, told her the story about what happened in the back of the beast where Donald Trump tried to wrestle the Secret Service so he could take control of the car and go join his armed protesters at the Capitol so that they could insurrect the United States of America. That whole thing. Cheney frequently points skeptics of her investigation to the government publishing office website that posted, she said, quote, "Transcripts, documents, exhibits, and our meticulously sourced 800-plus page final report." That website provides quote-unquote supporting documents to the claims made by Cheney and fellow anti-Trump enthusiasts. However, transcripts of fewer than half of the 1,000 interviews the committee claims it conducted are posted on that site. It is unclear how many of the hidden transcripts include exonerating information suppressed by the committee. Those documents support the committee's narrative rather than the truth of the events leading up to January 6, 2021, said Representative Barry Loudermilk, chairman of the House Administration's Subcommittee on Oversight. So apparently, Liz Cheney says that there is this clearinghouse, this dump of information from the January 6th committee. The general public can go there and find transcripts, find all their quote-unquote evidence so that they can review all the information for themselves, except it's actually missing most of that evidence, and it is assumed any of the evidence that might disagree with the public agenda and narrative of the January 6th sham committee. So it is getting consistently worse for Liz Cheney. It is also getting consistently worse in Georgia, where after 3.5 years, people have begun to decide that they actually do care that Jordy Fuchs and Brad Raffensperger illegally recorded that call between Donald Trump and the Secretary of State of Georgia's team, that call where Donald Trump told Brad Raffensperger, listen, you've got all of these examples of obvious election fraud in your state. Just find me one of those types that makes up for the 11,800 votes needed to change the outcome of this election and produce those and evidence of the fraud so that we can flip Georgia and move on, since there's no way in the world that Joe Biden actually won Georgia. It has always been illegal that that call was recorded, and now it is actually starting to matter because it was illegally obtained evidence. It is what they call fruits of the poisoned tree. Fani Willis has said that she based the entire indictment on that phone call. That was the seminal moment of this entire Trump-RICO Georgia issue. And it turns out that that call was illegally recorded and therefore inadmissible. Now, will that matter in this case? Probably not. The case is fake. It's just fake indictments, guys. The story will play out. But it is hilarious to watch it continue to collapse. Now, these two awful uniparty regime communists, two of the most corrupt actors in American political history, Adam Schiff and Liz Cheney, both of them involved in this Get Trump op, both of them hopefully to be widely seen as having committed treason and been traitors to the United States of America. Both of them pretend that Donald Trump committed insurrection by challenging the fraudulent electors presented to the country and to the joint session of Congress on January 6th, 2021. They accused Donald Trump of treason for challenging those electors. And the supporters of the Democrat Communist Party, the supporters of the Uniparty, the supporters of the global regime and the fake president, whether they have little D's next to their name or little R's next to their name, like Ron DeSantis supporters and Nikki Haley supporters, all of them went right along pretending that Donald Trump had committed insurrection or done something like it. He was responsible for all those very bad events that happened at the very violent insurrection on January 6th. We were told any questioning of the election or the electors posed a grave threat to our democracy, which is why I was particularly shocked to see this in the National Pulse this morning. 57% of Democrats want Congress to refuse certification if Trump wins. Wait, what? 57% of Democrats want the electors rejected if Trump wins? Just all of them? No matter what? Whether or not there's fraud, whether or not it's legitimate, they just want the electors rejected. 57% of Democrats. A stunning 57% of likely Democrat voters have told pollster Rasmussen Reports that Congress should refuse to certify the result of the 2024 election in the event of a Donald Trump victory. The poll, sponsored by National Pulse, asked a statistically representative 912 U.S. likely voters. Some Democrats in Congress have said that if Trump wins this year's election, they will vote against certifying the election results because of Trump's role in the January 6, 2021 Capitol riots. Do you support or oppose Democrats refusing to certify the election result if Trump wins? Almost two-thirds of self-identified liberals said they wanted Democrats to refuse certification despite the left and corporate media meltdown over 2020's electoral certification objections by Republicans. Black Americans also appear to favor the move, with 59% backing the recently mooted idea of blocking a second Trump term via Congress. Now, we were told that we refused to accept the results of an election because we lost, and that we would always do that whenever we lost. Despite the fact, of course, that I will dispute the results no matter who wins, I'll say we need an audit. We need a full forensic audit of every election everywhere, right down to the smallest, most minute detail, so that everyone in the country can understand that the election result was free and fair, safe and secure, and that the reported results accurately reflect the will and intent of the American voter, thus yielding an election we can trust. But we were told that talk like that was tearing down our democracy. We posed a direct threat to democracy for challenging the results of what was obviously a stolen election. They said we were committing treason for doing all that stuff, and now they are recommending doing all of that stuff. Of course, now they're just advocating for the good kind of treason. You're just not smart enough to get it. I'll be back tomorrow at the same reasonable time on the same reasonable podcast network. I don't have a network. Masks and lockdowns don't work. They lied to you about a pandemic. And Joe Biden will never be president.
In my mind, that's the end game.
If you're listening to this episode for free, you can support me and support the show and the work I do by signing up for a paid subscription at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as low as $50 a year or $5 a month. Comes out to under a quarter per episode, and you'll blast right through the paywall for all of the writing. The merch store is www.cancelcouture.com, and you can find everything else by heading to Linktree, linktree.com/I'mYourModerator. And I'll see you soon, out on the range. It's high noon.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
In my mind, that's the end game.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to follow what I'm reading and thinking throughout the day, you can do that by downloading the Telegram Messenger app and going to t.me/I'm your moderator. On social media, you can follow me on Truth Social, Getter, and Gab at I'm Your Moderator. I also have channels on Rumble and BitChute. If you'd like to follow the writing, you can find me at I'myourmoderator.substack.com. The merch site is cancelcouture.com or go direct shop.spreadshirt.com/cancel-couture. If you'd like to support the podcast financially, the best place to do that is Ko-Fi. Go to ko-fi.com/I'm your moderator. And all of these details will appear in the show notes with each episode. I'll see you soon down on the range.
It's high!